on ABC Radio New South Wales. This is the Country Hour.
It is indeed the Country Hour. I'm Kim Honan, or should I say the Country Half Hour. I'll be with you until 1:30 while our cricketers are regrouping and refreshing. But until then, there's no doubt that fires can be traumatising for those involved and affected, but that also extends to beekeepers.
The animals that are in pain, that are crying out in the forest, is absolutely horrific. And one of the beekeepers employs some young people, and it is really traumatised them.
And the battle for a spot on the AWI board. We'll hear from our final candidates today ahead of tomorrow's vote. That's to come on the Country Hour, and you can text me on 0467 922 684. Keep listening until 1:30. But right now, time for a bushfire update.
ABC Radio, bushfire information.
There is a total fire ban across much of New South Wales today, with hot and windy conditions across the state. We have a new watch and fire warning at Sodwells west of Lithgow on the Central Tablelands. The grass fire on Jerry Meadows Road is described as out of control. Properties to the south of the fire are at risk. Fire crews are responding. We also have a watch and act fire at Mile Creek Road in the state's north. The bushfire is burning in a large area between Bora Ridge in the north, Tabby Mobile and the Pacific Highway to the east, Whippery and Jackie Bulbin Flat in the south, and the Myrtle Creek area to the west. The advice from the RFS, if you are in the area of Tully Morgan or Jackie Bulbin Flat and your plan is to leave, leave early. If you are in the areas of Bungawalbin, Gibberidgee, Whippery or Myrtle Creek, monitor conditions. Know what you will do if fire threatens. If you are in an area that has already been affected by fire, there may be small areas of active fire burning for some time. Be aware of the dangers of trees and branches falling. Meanwhile, the New South Wales Rural Fire Service has issued a harvest safety alert for the following local government areas: Wagga Wagga, Lockhart, Junee, Coolamon, Cootamundra, Gundagai, Hilltops, Berrigan, Federation, Albury City, Greater Hume, Edward River, Murray River, Murrumbidgee, south of Collyambally, Tamora and Blandshire. Harvester operators in these areas must immediately stop and check local weather conditions before deciding whether it is safe to continue harvesting using a guideline available on the RFS website. According to the RFS, under the current conditions, fires will start easily and spread rapidly. Well, let's check with the Bureau now as to what we can expect for the remainder of the day. And Neil Fraser is with us. Good afternoon, Neil.
Yes, hello, Kim.
And the day's not shaping up too good, is it?
No. Temperature-wise, it's into the 40s. Tibooburra is the top at the moment, 43 there. Ivanhoe, 42, as is Wycliffe's and Fowler's Gap. And Deniliquin's already reached 41. So we're expecting those temperatures to continue climbing a few more degrees today. There's a front coming through the southwest. It went through Mildura a short time ago and accompanied by a dust storm. So that's the bad news there. And we're expecting areas of raised dust ahead of that with the strengthening northwesterly winds. But as the change goes through, it'll trap all the dust in a fairly narrow layer, so it becomes like a dust storm. As the cooler air slides over the hot land, it actually becomes very unstable and gets the dust lifted very quickly, and then but it gets held down by the front like a lid, so it becomes a very thick dust storm. So that's, as I said, moving through Mildura. That's going to make its way through the lower west and into the Riverina during this afternoon and evening. The front itself probably will reach Deniliquin in the late afternoon and then continue tracking further east. So by midnight or so, it'll be through most of the Riverina and getting up towards Tibooburra. So that's the bad news. Very hot, and apart from that, we've had lots of smoke spreading across the state from the ongoing bushfires. And the good news is that the front will weaken a little bit overnight, still moving up the coast and the south tomorrow, but it'll weaken somewhere on the mid-north coast by tomorrow night. Weather-wise, there's a slight chance we'll see some very high-based thunderstorms across the inland today. And they may pose a few problems, but certainly tomorrow it looks a stronger chance of some storms on the central part of the ranges at least, and around our northern inland parts around Bourke and east of there. Beyond that, for Saturday, fair chance of some showers and storms along the ranges again, mainly from the mid-north coast down towards the central tablelands, but not reaching the far northeast part of the state. And then there's some promise of better rainfall on Sunday, Monday, with some reasonable showers around central parts of the state at least, and getting into the northern tablelands, northwest slopes and plains. Mixed in with all this, though, it's quite unstable, so it could be storms on all the days over the coming week or so.
So not a great lot of relief insight for those areas affected by fires.
No, and thunderstorms pose a big threat of starting more fires, so that's not good news. But hopefully we get some reasonable showers on Sunday, Monday and into Tuesday, and put some dampener on the fire situation. But the other good news is the heat, the worst of the heat is today, and then by tomorrow, still be in the high 30s in the northern part of the inland, but down south with that front going through later today and overnight, should see temperatures dropping back to the around about 30 mark or even a touch lower, depending where you are. So that's good. And then the heat won't really come back until Monday. So by Monday, the heat returns to the southern inland areas back into the mid to high 30s, and northern inland parts remaining pretty hot anyway, mid to high 30s right through after today when it's into the 40s.
And Neil, if we head to the coast, any marine wind warnings?
Yes, we have a strong wind warning for the northeasterly sea breezes right along the coast this afternoon. And then with a southerly change coming along overnight and tomorrow, could be quite a gusty change at first, and then it'll settle down soon after. So might come through 25 to 30 knots, and then after a couple of hours should drop back to 15 to 20 knots. So that, as I said, it's going to go through, probably going through the Hunter Coast during the afternoon, and then petering out somewhere on the lower mid-north coast, and then it's going to sit there for quite a few days. So any further north from there, they're going to remain in the northerly estuary.
Okay, great. Thanks so much, Neil.
Thanks, Kim.
That is Neil Fraser from The Bomb. It is 12 past one here on the Country Hour. Well, Dirt Girl has been a darling of ABC TV for more than a decade. She wears gumboots, grows tomatoes and drives a big orange tractor. Well, her home, Dirt Girl World, at Kamaya Creek, northwest of Whippery on the far north coast, is under threat from the Mile Creek Road fire, which is now at Watch and Act this afternoon. The creators of the award-winning show, Kate McQuillan and Huey Eustace, have had to evacuate the property twice in the last week. An RFS crew was there yesterday keeping it safe, and I spoke to Kate a little earlier.
Actually been months that we've been on fire watch with the Ratville fires going across the top, and now of course the Bungawalman fire heading towards us. What it looks like at the moment is that the work that they have done last night to get the fire into some sort of containment seems to be holding and doing its job, but of course everybody is fearing and dreading a change of wind this afternoon, and if we get the north easterly as predicted, that will push the fire straight into our place and into Dirt Girl World, and also, of course, into all of our neighbours at Kamaya Creek, and then putting Whippery into danger as well.
And so how far away is the fire at the moment? Is it creeping closer?
Yeah, from what I can gather, we've just been having a conversation. It's about 500 metres from the house at the moment and creeping closer, yes.
Kate, how tough was it for you to leave not just your home but Dirt Girl World, knowing that it may not be there when you get back?
Yes, look, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, of course, driving out, I thought I would be worse than I would. I thought, really, but really there was a sense of urgency when we left that I think pushes some of those emotions to the background a little bit, because you know that you need to be out of there safely. But, you know, you work really hard in your life, and I think we see this with everybody, to be resilient and to be strong. And it's these times, it's not the easy times that test that. That's these times, and that's why we all got to do that work on being resilient. And so, yes, it's. I always say we have to react to the truth, and at the moment the truth is that Dirt Girl World is still there, still sitting there waiting. It's being protected and guarded and looked after by people who are absolute experts in this. And when I met the fireys, they came and did a recce at the house the day before, and when I met them, I instantly felt such ease and trust that we were going to be in the safest hands. And while I do not want them to put their life in any risk, I'm happy for them to walk away, to jump in their truck and drive away from our place, if, you know, rather than put themselves in any risk. I do really trust that there's people who know what they're doing. They're looking after it. And people who would get in their way are not there, which is a hard decision to not be there. It really was, but it was the right decision.
That is Kate McQuillan, a creator of Dirt Girl World and Grabby TV, based at Kamaira Creek, northwest of Whippery on the state's far north coast, and the Mile Creek Road fire at Watch and Act this afternoon. Well, still on the fires, among the widespread devastation still burning across the east state with these fires is the loss of dozens, if not hundreds, of beehives and millions of bees. And as we've already heard this week, in addition to that, much of the bushland used by bees for foraging has been destroyed and is expected to take years to recover. The president of the New South Wales Apiarist Association, Stephen Target, told Karen Thomas, in some cases, it could be a decades-long recovery.
The northeast is a large honey production area with lots of beekeepers up on the Tablelands and down on the coast. And they've lost resource. But the issue is they haven't lost the resource just for 12 months. The fires were that hot in places that the beekeepers, who have a fairly good understanding of their local bush, don't believe those trees will be flowering and producing nectar and pollen for the bees for at least 20 years, and in some cases they don't believe it'll be in their lifetime.
I mean, that's just incredible that these fires have wiped out that resource for such a substantial amount of time.
Australian trees have systems in place that allow them to survive fires. But and so they'll put on leaves and the tree, you know, if it wasn't too hot, they'll put on leaves and come back and look like a tree. But until the tree gets its energy back and we have rain events and it's got good moisture, then it'll put on growth, and which means buds, and then sometime later it will flower. But that's years away for the majority of these trees.
What options does that leave for these beekeepers?
They can rebuild their hive numbers. That can happen if they've got access to flowering resource for their bees to breed on. But those beekeepers will either go further afield chasing resource. But most resource in the States is well utilised already. So it's going to overcrowd resources further afield as these beekeepers try to find some resource to breed their bees and hopefully get a honey surplus to help the cash flow in their business.
Do you worry that this is going to drive some people out of the industry?
It may. It's particularly difficult we're an agricultural industry, and we're like most agricultural industries. But we have an aged, the beekeeping industry is an aged industry. But we do have some young people coming through. But those people have borrowed money to get hives, buy the truck, get the extracting plant, the clean room, the shed, and all that sort of stuff. And I'm afraid some of those will struggle and go, this is just all too hard, and I've got to service my debt. I'm going to go back to building, or I'm going to go back to whatever, find employment elsewhere and drop out of the industry, which is, to our detriment. We need young people coming through the industry.
That is New South Wales Apiarist Association President Stephen Target.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio New South Wales.
Kim Honan with you today, keeping the chair warm for Michael Condon in a special edition of The Country Hour today in the cricket break. Cricket will resume at 1:30. Well, the battle for a spot on the AWI board has been a brutal one, with accusations of dirty tricks, a please explain letter from the Agriculture Minister, and a stoush amongst growers over animal welfare. Ahead of the AGM tomorrow, The Country Hour has been bringing you interviews with the candidates. George Faulkner is a sheep breeder from Western New South Wales, and he'd like to see the AWI develop new markets rather than being too reliant on China.
First of all, you've got to make money out of this business of growing, and the last 6 months have shown the vulnerability of the Australian wool market with its overdependence on China. So we've got to improve the price and demand for Australian wool by expanding the manufacturing base to other countries other than China. So that would include, North Vietnam, North and South Korea, India, Taipei, Eastern Europe, and Turkey. So we need a bigger base.
overall, when you look at the job that AWI is doing, do you think that the board needs to continue on its current path or needs to change directions in any particular way?
I think the best thing the board could do would be to fully adopt the Ernst & Young recommendations that they put forward last year. I don't think they're more than halfway through adopting them all. So there's room for improvement there. There needs to be better consultation with growers. There's some 21,000 shareholders, but there's 61,000 paying the levy. So that's only one in three. So there's a big need to improve the communication and shareholder base so they have a vote in the saying how the company's to be run in the future.
That is George Faulkner there speaking to Josh Becker. And Noel Henderson was recommended by the Independent Board Nomination Committee but was not endorsed by AWI. A stud breeder from Avington Merino Stud in Central Victoria, Noel Henderson says he wants to see more investment in alternatives to mulesing.
Let me be very transparent about where we come from at the Avington Merino Stud. We ceased mulesing in 2011, and since then we haven't had any difference really in terms of fly strike issues. We have very little fly strike. However, I do recognise that there are parts of Australia where the climate and conditions are quite different to what we have here. There is also another issue that there is no national code at the moment, and we're seeing state governments starting to develop and want to implement it. And I think that's leadership that should come from AWI. Long term, I think that we need to continue with the research to find a vaccine for the fly that attacks the sheep or other acceptable methods of fly control. And by acceptable, I mean what's going to be socially responsible, because social attitudes towards the treatment and management of animals has changed considerably over the 20 years that the debate's been going on in the wool industry. And the fact that the wool industry hasn't been able to deal with this effectively, I think, is one of the reasons why there continues to be such bad publicity about this.
Noel Henderson speaking there to Josh Becker. And for more, head online to the ABC Rural website to read a feature on the upcoming election. And we will bring you the results from the AGM on the Country Hour tomorrow. Well, to the calls by New South Wales Farmers and Dairy Connect for the supermarkets to lift the price of their generic milk to $1.50 a litre. We heard from Aldi and Woolworths on the program yesterday, and Coles has since responded with a statement. It reads, Coles is now sourcing milk directly from farmers in Victoria and southern New South Wales for Coles brand 2 and 3 litre milk, offering a competitive price for up to 3 years. This provides certainty of income to farmers so they can plan for the future. In other markets, we purchase these products from dairy processors. They determine how much farmers get paid and pass that cost on to us. Coles is currently paying processors the highest wholesale prices for milk in several years. End of statement. And well, we have put a request in this morning to the dairy cooperative Norco to discuss those comments from Coles. It supplies Coles with milk for the supermarket's home brand milk for the northern market. Well, with dry, hot conditions continuing today, the local land services in Western New South Wales is encouraging landholders to take the opportunity to trap feral pigs. Senior Biosecurity Officer at Central West LLS, Rhett Robinson, told Patrick Bell that farmers are encouraged to work together.
Feral pigs will be really limited to watering points in the hot weather. They won't be too far away from them, and unfortunately, a lot of the creeks are dried up, and so there will be limited watering points where they'll be congregating. So it'll be allow us a real ideal time to target feral pigs, and should be able to get some really good control programs in place.
Are they normally a difficult species to try and get a control of?
Yeah, in good seasonal conditions when there's a lot of water and it's mild temperatures, they don't need to sort of, they can spread out a lot more. But, yeah, in these sort of current seasonal conditions, where they're pushed for feed, where it's hot and they'll need those watering points to wallow in to keep cool, it just provides, just the ideal conditions for them to concentrate numbers in certain spots and with the season of the way it is at the moment.
That's Central West Local Land Services Senior Biosecurity Officer Rhett Robinson speaking there to our reporter, Patrick Bell. It's nearing 25 past one and time for the markets.
Oh.
And first up, we'll head to Yass, where Graham Richard has results from the cattle markets. Good afternoon, Graham.
Good afternoon. Numbers lifted for a yarding of 2,341. The increase was mostly in the heifer run. Yearlings were well supplied and the quality was good, with plenty of cattle with weight and condition. Grown steers were again limited and there was a good run of heavy cows. Young cattle sold to a dearer trend while the cows were cheaper. Veeler steers to restock reached 324 cents and the heifers 262. Medium weight feeder steers were 25 cents dearer, 265 to 319. The heavyweights 9 better, 280 to 314. Feeder heifers were around firm, 240 to 282. Trade heifers lifted 6 cents, 280 to 289. A plainer and smaller run of grown steers ranged between 265 and 285. Euro two-tooth heifers sold between 280 and 290. Cows were 7 cents softer on the medium weight 2 scores, 192 to 214. Heavy 3 and 4 score cows were 8 to 10 cheaper, 205 to 248 for the majority, with high yielding sea muscle cows selling to 262. And this has been Graham Richard at Yass.
Thank you, Graham. And to Armidale, James Armitage. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. 1,420 cattle pen, females dominating supply. Again, young calves well supplied. Quality was mixed, not as many of the very plain cattle. The usual processes attended. Demand varied. Restockers very active on the calves. They were as much as 40 cents a kilo dearer. The good quality lots making from 230 to 330 cents a kilo. A reduced penny of yearling steers saw the plain lightweight significantly cheaper, with D muscles 144 to 296 cents. Heavier C muscles a similar fall, with a drop in quality. Those over 280 kilos, 257 to 290. Much cheaper trends for the yearling heifers, with D muscles 120 to 277. Heavy ground feeder steers made 300 cents. The plainest conditioned ground heifers were cheaper, 70 to 226 cents for one scores. The two scores dearer, 190 to 268. Strong restocker competition saw plain conditioned cows slightly cheaper, with D muscle 1 and 2 scores, 91 to 210 cents. Heavy cows were much cheaper, with 3 and 4 scores, 180 to 230. Heavy bulls reached 317 cents a kilo. James Armitage for MLA in Armidale.
Thanks, James. And David Monk has results from Dubbo Cattle. Good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon. Numbers are back by 1,400 for a yarding of 2,430, the smallest yarding we've seen in Dubbo for some time. It was a mixed yarding with some good pens of well-finished yearlings, along with good numbers of plainer conditioned young cattle. All grades of cows were represented, and there were a few pens of well-finished ground steers and heifers. Young cattle of the trade were 6 cents cheaper, with the prime steer yearling selling from 273 to 290. Feeder steers were 6 to 10 cents dearer, while the feeder heifers were firm to 3 cents dearer. The feeder steers sold from 230 to 312, while the feeder heifers sold from 233 to 282. Young steers to the restockers were up to 15 cents dearer, while the young restocker heifers were cheaper. The young steers sold from 238 to 318, while the young restocker heifers sold from 161 to 288. Ground steers and heifers were 4 cents cheaper, with the prime, medium and heavyweight steers selling from 275 to 289, while the ground heifers sold to 279. Cows were up to 23 cents cheaper, with the two scores selling from 100 to 207. The better 3 and 4 score cows sold from 190 to 255, with the prime heavyweights averaging 241. Bulls sold to 316. This is David Monk reporting from Dubbo.
Thanks, David. And finally today to Wagga, where Leanne Dax has results from the lamb market.
24,500 lambs and just over 24,000 sheep sold to the usual export buyers. However, not all domestic processes attended, while others only operated sporadically. There was a notable drop-off in weight and quality. Lambs above 24 kilos carcass weight were few. Lambs under 20 kilos were plentiful, and prices bounced around depending on who was buying. Trade lambs lacked competition at times, and prices slipped back $6 to $7. Light trade, 18 to 20 kilo, 134 to 149, medium trade 148 to 170, heavy trade 160 to 184, averaging 696 cents a kilogram carcass weight. Heavy lambs dipped $14, 170 to 200. Extra heavy sold to Apache competition, selling $10 to $18 cheaper, 181 to 230 to average 685 cents a kilogram carcass weight. The lightweight stall lambs fell back 15, making from 74 to 128. Stall lambs with weight and frame to feed on or return to the paddock sold 7 to 10 cheaper, 130 to 153. I'm Leanne Dux for MLA.
Thank you, Leanne. And that's it for the country half hour today. Thanks for your company. And to all the farmers and fishers out there, just want to say happy National Ag Day and World Fisheries Day to you. Keep listening to ABC Radio for the latest on the fires across the state. But right now, I'm going to return you back to the cricket at the Gabba. Have a great day.